This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
British education protests turn violent. Washington State considers banning alcoholic energy drinks, and a man hits a train with a lawnmower.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, I give you Legion of News!
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, November 10th, 2010. Up to 50,000 university students took to the streets of London on Wednesday to protest government plans to triple tuition fees and cut funding for education. While much of the rally, the largest since the coalition government took office, went off peacefully, clashes between police and students erupted in parts of the city, and 9 people have been treated for injuries. A standoff is still ongoing at the Conservative Party headquarters in London's Millbank Tower, where more than 200 protesters stormed the building while shouting "Tory scum" and throwing smoke bombs. The Telegraph writes that employees had to be evacuated as masked youths rampaged through corridors and onto the roof, smashing windows and closed-circuit TV cameras. Protesters are still throwing missiles and liquids from the roof. "We are destroying the building just like they are destroying our chances at affording higher education," said Corin Parkin, a student at London's City University.
They're throwing missiles and liquids.
Well, you know.
That really is the whole spectrum of the object range, isn't it?
Well, missiles being like basically anything hard you can chuck.
Typewriter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Aaron Porter, the president of the National Union of Students, said the violence was not part of our plan and condemned the violence as despicable. The union, which organized the rally, has pledged to recall Liberal Democrats who voted for the controversial plan. Under the cuts, tuition fees will increase by $14,000 a year, funding will decrease by 40%, and teaching grants in all subjects except math and science will be eliminated. Washington State's Liquor Control Board is considering a ban on alcoholic energy drinks. Governor Chris Gregoire has scheduled a news conference Wednesday morning to discuss the topic. The board is apparently meeting today just beforehand, and Gregoire will be joined at her news conference by Liquor Control Chairwoman Sharon Foster. 9 Central Washington University students were hospitalized after a party last month. Authorities say they drank the caffeinated malt liquor beverage Four Loko. The makers of Four Loko, Fusion Projects Incorporated, that's a fusion spelled with a P-H, say they will work hard to ensure products aren't sold to underage people. They also point out the partygoers may have also been drinking other types of alcohol.
How is it that it's... Well, first of all, I'm printing that out, by the way, the thing that you're...
That I'm printing out?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Did you make sure that you're using the black ink only cartridge? Because otherwise it will turn out unreadable.
Well, that's less of an issue for me, I suppose, since I don't have to read it.
Okay.
So this is Fusion Incorporated. So they make Four Loko. Do they make other products as well, like petrochemicals?
Sure. They probably make, like, you know...
Nuclear waste disposal kits?
Gum that's filled with artificial marijuana.
I always figured that companies like this, it's sort of a waste-not-want-not mentality, where they started off by creating some sort of hideous, toxic industrial disposal mechanism, and then they just figured, well, we got all these pans of sludge here at the bottom. What can we do with this? We'll give this to people at the University of Washington. And then it becomes a hit if laced with some sort of cherry additive or flavoring.
Well, I think there's kind of the good side and the dark side of the force in this sort of situation. You've got, like, on one side, you've got, like, the guy who makes Vizo, who gets, like, really high quality, you know, caffeine from someplace and does fruit juice and tries to put all of these, like, you know, vitamins and stuff in it. And then you got people who make Four Loko, where they just go, how much booze and caffeine can we jam into this drink? And then sell it to kids.
Well, that is the American way. Yeah. I mean, anything worth doing is worth overdoing. If a little bit of alcohol is good, Don, then I think a lot of alcohol must be better, right?
Well, I have always thought so.
I would say that the vast majority of Portlanders would find no fault with that formula. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, we'll have your entertainment news as well as science on the march. If you would like to get this program on your mobile device, speaking of science, you can do so. It is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile. .cascadia.fm. You can also get it as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com and via iTunes later on in the day as well.
Elizabeth Smart has finished testifying in the criminal case against the man charged with kidnapping her. In session correspondent Jean Cesarez says the defense didn't spend a lot of time questioning her.
We never dreamed that the cross-examination would be so short, but the federal prosecutor was very gentle because this is the surviving victim. And so there was not extensive cross-examination, just a few points.
Also, because you get the sense that she's crazy, and if you just lean on her, she's going to collapse like a big collapsing thing. And it's going to end badly for everybody.
And who can really blame her for being crazy, too? I mean, have you followed, you know, any of her testimony about, like, what they did to her?
Oh, yeah. Well, and it was that thing. It was one of those weird joint kidnappings where it was, like, the guy and his wife.
Yeah.
And they both thought, we need a new pet around the house. Let's get a blonde girl.
Yeah. And then it's just... I think part of the most horrifying thing, one of the things that came out in the testimony, she was talking about how she was sitting in a library because I guess, you know, they were all homeless and traveling the streets. And she was in the library. I think they were using the internet or something. And a detective actually came up to her and asked.
Are you that missing girl?
He asked if he could see her face because they had her wearing a veil and wanted to see her face and said, we're looking for Elizabeth Smart. And the wife was squeezing her leg under the table.
Oh, it's so creepy.
And she's kind of like, no, you can't look at my face because it's against our religion. And the guy basically only, like, kind of pushed it for a couple minutes and then left. And she was kind of like, now she has to look back at that her whole life and just go, I could have gotten away, but I didn't.
Nothing to see here. Guess I'll move on.
Yeah. Cesarez, with True TV's In Session, says she saw a big change today in Smart's personality.
I saw a much more defiant Elizabeth Smart today, a bit sarcastic, some anger I heard from on the stand today. The other day she has been very quiet, but yet very pensive and very thoughtful with very explicit answers.
It just seems this is like about every 6 months or slightly longer, there's like one of those... I want to say Fritz Weaver, but that's the actor from the Twilight Zone.
Yes.
There's one of those guys in Austria that just, you know, has the dungeon in his backyard where he's got the kids that are kept for like 20 years. But then every now and again, you get a guy like this, too. Because this is the sort of like the Manson thing, you know, where like you snatch the kids up when they're about 18 and then, you know, have them for just long enough that they forget what the outside world is like. And then they're shaving their heads and skipping down an L.A. County, hallway.
Yeah, I like they're seeing a little anger. You think she's got some anger?
Yes, well, I'd say she certainly got seeds for bitterness.
A car hit a horse along Highway 99 south of Monmouth early Tuesday morning, and a passenger in the vehicle was killed in the collision. The horse also died. Lieutenant Greg Hastings with Oregon State Police said the car was traveling southbound on Highway 99 near Old Fort Road when it struck the horse, which had somehow wandered onto the traffic lane. The impact of the crash smashed in the passenger side of the vehicle, killing 30-year-old Jeffrey Matthew Collins, who had been sitting there, Hastings said. Police said he was also from Dallas, Oregon. Joshua Swindle, 28, of Dallas, Oregon, was the driver of the car. He was not seriously injured. Investigators are trying to figure out how the horse got loose on a busy roadway. The crash occurred just after 6 a.m.
You know, when I hit a horse, man, A, it works out badly for the horse, and B, that'll just destroy whatever. It doesn't matter what you're driving. There's no SUV that's going to protect your family from hitting a horse.
Yeah, that or a deer. This is that kind of thing of moving to Oregon from the big urban city. Really surprised, in the springtime to see how many deer hits car stories that there are every
year. There are those signs by the side of the road that where they're not fooling around, where the thing just shows a deer sprinting into the road and it says,
beware.
Well,
it looks like he's dancing, actually. He's up on his hind legs going, woo!
It's
happy.
You swap that out, like it's the other way. If you go from here to Southern California, you exchange that for that thing that shows, the whole family sprinting across the highway, which is a sign that I know you're not supposed to laugh at, but which is hilarious nonetheless. I mean, notwithstanding whatever social propriety is supposed to keep me from finding it amusing, it's incredibly amusing, where it's like dad, mom, and then what looks like a kitty carryall, it indicates like they may be crossing. And by crossing, we mean leaping in front of your car as you're driving on the 405.
The National Labor Relations Board has issued a complaint against a Connecticut company after it fired a worker after she posted critical comments about her supervisor on Facebook. Attorney Paul Callan explains the possibly precedent-setting move.
Now the LRB says if you are discussing work conditions on Facebook and other workers are participating, it's legal conduct.
Okay. Callan says this is a controversial decision that will not go away quietly.
I think when lawyers start arguing about this, they're going to say, this is really not about workplace conditions. This is about a company's entire national reputation, and the NLRB should take a different look at it. So it's going to be a fierce battle in the courts.
But this is like that thing that they roll into the courts every year or so where some company fires a guy for smoking because they just decide that they don't want to be paying for your cancer treatments in like 10 or 15 years.
The internet stuff is really interesting to me because I've always thought it was fairly, to me personally, it was always pretty, really clear cut when it came to things like them firing you because they found porn in your desk drawer or something, because there are always guys who have porn in their desk drawer. And it's like, well, you're at work. It's the company's desk drawer.
Maybe they do things differently in the newspaper business, but.
Well, usually it was booze in the desk, in the newspaper business. But you've heard those stories, though, about, the guy with the porn at work. And then he always complains that his privacy was invaded.
You were rooting around in my possessions.
Looking in his drawer. And you're like, well, no, it's our desk.
Right.
Same thing with school lockers. It's the school's property. So it's like if you have a big bag of, marijuana, and a video camera with, you having sex with your girlfriend in the thing. It's like it's the school's locker. But with the internet, it's kind of a different story. If you're at home minding your own business and you're posting about your work on Facebook, is it or is it not any of their concern?
I think your school and work experiences were a much richer tapestry than mine, because I must have skipped the whole, I don't think I knew the guy who had the big bag of marijuana and the camera showing him having sex with this girl. Or maybe I just wasn't invited to those kinds of parties. I don't know. Maybe my social circle was, had a more finite sense of fun.
I did have a crush on a guy until I found out he had he showed me the giant bottle of Reds he had in his locker, because he had a cousin who worked at a pharmacy.
Just a huge Seconal bag that he carried around with him everywhere.
And I was kind of like, I'm only 14. I don't think this is a good idea.
Awesome.
All right. The University of Vermont is trying out a new way to go green when it comes to dining. UVM has started selling reusable sporks to their students, which cost $1.
Or they could just, make things out of metal.
In residential dining halls, washable plates, utensils, and glassware are also used, but that's not always an option at the university's 6 on-the-go dining facilities, like the snack bars, takeout things. UVM had previously been using a so-called compostable cutlery. The school tossed it into the 5 tons of weekly food scraps sent to a compost site in Burlington. But eventually, the composting facility realized the plant-based flatware wasn't breaking down like it was supposed to, and they ended up having to sift through all the compostable material to take out all the knives and the forks and the spoons. So they stopped accepting it from the university. So far, UVM has distributed 2,500 reusable sporks to students and given them a 5-cent meal discount every time they use one.
Is this really considered breaking news that we have reusable, silverware?
I think it's interesting. I think it's good.
I don't know what kind of silverware you have at your house, but I've been using the reusable kind, forever.
I know, but think about an entire university and how much plasticware would go into the landfill. And if they can actually not put that much stuff into the environment, why not?
You don't have to convince me that reusing it is better. I'm just saying, I think the rest of humanity has been reusing its dinnerware, for most of our lives. Well, you go to my house, it's pretty much all reusable there. You wash it, and then you put it back in the cupboard, and then you use it again the next day. I just don't know. I don't really know that it's like groundbreaking technology or anything.
Well, imagine if all of the people in Portland who go to food carts, for example, and
yes.
if they get things from food carts, that they need a fork. Instead of getting a plastic fork every time they buy something, if they have their own thing, and they go, look, I have my spork, and they get 5 cents off, and then they wash it themselves.
I know what reusable means. I'm just saying, like coffee places have been doing this forever. It's like a bring-your-own-mug kind of a thing. So, I don't know. I'm just saying, it seems for an institution of higher learning, they're, you know, like 25 years late to the game on that.
Plus, it's a spork.
Yeah, well, I like to say spork as much as the next guy.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. They actually sell from ThinkGeek, and I think at REI, they sell this too. It's a titanium spork.
Yes.
And it weighs something like 0.2 ounces. It's like one of those, it's like a space-age spork type thing that doesn't even, it's weird because you hold it in your hand, it's like holding effectively like nothing.
Wow.
They ought to issue you, when you go to the college, they ought to just give you like a spork around a thing on your neck. You just carry it around. Like I got the jump drive or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there you go. Bam, done.
Well, that's the next step, I think.
Right. Awesome.
Thank you. Oregon Republican Congressman Greg Walden is heading up Republicans' transition efforts after gaining a majority in the midterm elections. And he's pledged to be respectful of Democrats who will shift to the minority.
This is Walden 1?
Yes.
Came here with brains. They shouldn't be parked at the door just because they have a different party label.
Walden says Republicans are vowing not to run roughshod over Democrats.
Treat others like you want to be treated. And I think that's really important to restoring some confidence in this institution.
Yeah, all right.
Where does that phrase come from? Roughshod?
I have no idea. I was actually just wondering the same thing. I was wondering if it had something to do with Teddy Roosevelt being a rough rider, but probably not.
Mm.
And both of them just make me think of a guy wearing assless chaps.
One thing, running roughshod would maybe mean that you were running with, like...
hobnailed boots?
Maybe. Yeah.
You're wearing some sort of mountaineering gear and crampons. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget this program is available later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Coming up later on this hour, your entertainment news portion of Legion of News. And at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson radio program. Coming up today, Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week will be joining us. Also, Roger Klein of Roger Klein and the Peacemakers will be joining us on the phone later on today. That's the Rick Emerson Show. A little bit after 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com. Legion of News brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com. If you go there right now, at this very moment, this very instant, even while I am forming these words with my lips, you can go to squireselectric.com. You're able to do that because of the power of electricity, and depending on where you are, the power of Ethernet wiring as well. And so if you are at your home or if you're at your business, those things are only possible because somebody came in and wired that correctly. You move into a new house, you move into a house that was built, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years ago. You move into a brand new office, maybe something that's being rewired for your particular kind of profession. It is not always up to snuff right out of the gate. So you want to make sure that it's going to work properly, and it's going to work properly the first time you need it to function. So you find out more about how to get that done and how to get it done with a free estimate, so you know up front about how much it's going to cost, by calling 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609, or going to SquiresElectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. That is SquiresElectric.com. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Over 59 million Americans lacked health insurance for some part of 2010, a new report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention finds. A $4 million person increase from 2008. The study examined 90,000 people from over 35,000 households across the country and found that the number of uninsured had steadily increased over the past 2 years, as did the number of people who had gone more than a year without coverage. While the number of children without insurance dropped 5% between 2008 and 2009, both adults and kids lost private coverage over the past decade. This is from Dr. Thomas Frieden, director of the Centers for Disease Control. He added that the study also exploded two myths about healthcare, that only poor or healthy people lack insurance. In fact, he said half of the uninsured are over the poverty level and one in three adults under 65 in the middle income range.
That only poor or healthy people lack insurance?
Yeah, that they're either people can't, that the only people, I think people think most people who don't have insurance are either healthy and figure they don't need they're too poor to afford it.
Or I'm young and fit and the whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Frieden said more than two out of five individuals who are uninsured at some point during the past year had one or more chronic diseases. The report is expected to invigorate debate about health care reform, which some key Republicans, including Republican House Speaker-in-waiting John Bonner, have pledged to repeal. However, while a full repeal would prove difficult, others have promised to pursue alternative tactics, such as defending key reforms.
I like the idea that it's going to be really difficult to repeal health care and to get rid of it all. But by God, they're going to buckle down and do the hard work that needs to be done to get rid of health care altogether.
Yeah.
That, you know, we couldn't actually put that effort toward, creating some sort of health care system. I don't know.
Yeah, they do realize that if many of us who are like poor and middle class die, there's no one to actually do the work in their rich Republican factories. Right?
Well, and also the fact that, you know, that everybody, I mean, you know, like 80% of bankruptcies are caused because of health care bills. I mean, that's a thing that people don't really realize, is that, you know, the single worst thing you can do for your credit is to file bankruptcy. And the single leading cause of bankruptcies is outstanding, health costs. So, I mean, it just means we're going to be on this wonderful sort of rinse, wash, repeat track of recession, you know, about every 15 years, like forever.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Hooray. Oh, wait, no, not hooray. One Oklahoma mother-to-be didn't expect to have her baby minutes after her water broke, but that's exactly what happened to Carrie Snell. She delivered her own healthy baby boy. In this audio catch, she describes her actions.
I wonder if this is going to be a whole lot of audio about pushing or things squeezing or cracking or something.
Oh, I hope so.
I don't want to.
And I was screaming, and it was so gooey.
I got to tell you, but then the moment I held my child, I forgot all about the gelatinous goo that had filled the back of my car. The thing about having kids, which, you know, whatever. It just makes me glad, you know, that I'm not a woman, because I don't like the idea of anything, like, breaking inside me.
No.
You know, anytime there's some sort of a natural, and women seem to get that a lot. You know, there's various times in a woman's life when you engage in some activity, maybe childbirth, maybe the creation of said child, and you just got a thing that's breaking at somewhere inside your body. And I just
the
seems
human,
like an
the human
altogether
body,
unpleasant
yeah.
activity.
The human body as a whole is icky. It's made out of meat, and it's filled with goo. And then the female body is, like, even worse. And then we're expected to do things like grow up parasitic human inside of us and, like, you know, squeeze it out in a painful manner.
You know,
and it's just horrible.
The thing you can say for the female body is at least God took the time to hide the, you know, all the ductwork, though. He just, you know, it's like he finished the ceiling as opposed to men, where it's all just like a bunch of tubing hanging out. And it's like you're just wandering inside a Bi-Mart. All right. Let's see. Here is that woman talking about that baby.
I was able to send a text message to my husband at 12:43 telling him my water broke.
OMG. Hate you lots.
I sat down and his head was already coming out. And I delivered the head and then just caught him and held him.
My baby's in my birth canals entering your worlds.
Oh, God. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I think this is kind of like when men hear stories about, like, some other guy getting kicked in the balls.
Yeah.
And how they have that sympathy thing. Whenever I hear childbirth stories, I just go, no.
My placenta's in your back seat, staining your fabrics.
God.
I could do that all day.
His head came out.
All right.
I don't want anyone's head coming out of me ever.
Here's the thing about this, though, is at no point in the story does she address the whole... I want to know the whole thing about the cutting the umbilical cord thing or whatever. I mean, is that, because that's, as I understand it, that's not a thing you can just do with, like, tweezers. I mean, you need basically like a buck knife or your teeth or something.
Yeah,
for that.
I was going to say, if she's doing it all natural, like we do in the animal kingdom, she just chew through the umbilical cord with her teeth.
Hold on, let me just.
I was able to send a text message to my husband at 12:43 telling him my water broke. And I sat down, and his head was already coming out. And I delivered the head and then just caught him.
I delivered the head.
Held him.
Oh, God.
There's something about the phrase, I delivered the head, and not just because of the seven thing. There's just something there I can't. Like, it's just sort of like she delivered the head and just, you know, and just put it in a tray and then just decided to take care of the rest later and then just sort of assemble it like a Monster Maker kit at home.
Once I send this Facebook status update, then I'll, like, deliver the rest of the baby.
All right, one more time.
I was able to send a text message to my husband at 12:43 telling him my water broke. And I sat down, and his head was already coming out.
Yeah.
And I delivered the head and then just caught him and held him.
Have delivered head. Yeah, really. Okay.
Oh, Lord. Let's do some science news, please.
Okay. There's your science. You feel like we still need more science after the head delivery business? Well, I suppose that's your call.
Nothing could be that icky today. Scientists excavating an Ice Age ecosystem in the resort town of Snowmass Village, Colorado, say they may have found the first Jefferson's ground sloth ever discovered in Colorado. Denver Museum of Nature and Science Research Associate Greg McDonald confirmed Saturday that a bone found earlier this week is the upper arm of the Jefferson's ground sloth. He says that other sloths have been found in Colorado, but they were a different species called Harlan's ground sloth. The bone found this week is the first from a Jefferson's ground sloth in Colorado. So far, scientists working at the site have also found a Colombian mammoth, American mastodon, Ice Age bison, and an Ice Age deer. Robots that take care of our frail, aging bodies may look more likely now that one has demonstrated its ability to clean a human patient's arms and legs. The robo-nurse, named Cody, has limbs with reduced stiffness in case of accidental bumping.
Cody?
Cody.
Okay.
And is designed to exert a very low amount of pressure while sponging down a patient. There's also a stop button ready for humans to press, just in case. Roboticist Chi Hung Aaron King of Georgia Tech's Healthcare Robotics Lab volunteered to lie down and subject himself to Cody's tender care. The robot nurse joins a line of serious bots that can do everything from robotic surgery to folding your laundry. On the battlefield, soldiers love their robots.
Where are these robots? If there's an army of robots that can do everything from, quote, surgery to folding your laundry, it seems unfair that they're being kept from the public. Is this a thing that you, like, do I have to live in Japan to have these?
Yes.
Or?
Yes, you do. Or apparently just hang out.
What is up with the Japanese hogging the robots? What gives, friends?
Well, I think this guy is Chinese, Chi Hung King, although he calls himself Aaron. And this is at Georgia Tech, but it's in a robotics
lab. He calls
lab.
Himself Aaron?
Yes.
What kind of story is this? There's a robot named Cody that seems Japanese, but it's being held by a guy in China whose name is Chung Win, but calls himself Ted,
and
or whatever.
And he's actually in Georgia.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to grit my teeth and get through this.
There are robots in the battlefield that dismantle...
There are no robots in the battlefield. What battlefield where?
They dismantle roadside bombs or act as tireless hunter-predator drones in the sky.
That's a lie. You're making it up. You're making... This story has been created whole cloth. You've just pulled this out of your ass.
Researchers have previously unveiled dancing robots, and some have predicted that sex bots could be made for marriages between humans and robots by 2050.
Now, see, but when they say dancing robot, they're just talking about that Santa thing that's always gyrating at the mall.
No, haven't you seen that robot that I think it was Honda or Sony made? And it's like white, and he looks kind of like Ava from WALL-E, only he has like a torso and arms and legs, and he can dance, and he can walk up and down stairs, and he can do stuff. It's creepy and scary.
I'm waiting for some sort of comical mix-up where the dancing robot goes to the battlefield of Afghanistan, and then, like, the hunter-killer robot gets sent to the mall to do, like, an ice-capades thing with children. Just sort of like, yay!
Well, anyway, but first we have to get through this whole thing where they create robots that will, wipe your butt for you
so
when you're
in
the hospital.
So this is a robot that'll give you a sponging.
Yes, it will give you a sponge bath.
All right. All right, because we haven't done enough to alienate and irritate them already to guarantee their eventual overthrow of the human race. Here, would you sponge my folds, robot? Thanks. I appreciate that. Jesus.
A San Diego man built a homemade space camera with household items and launched it into the stratosphere to capture images of the San Diego region. Eric Madigan said he made his space camera in an hour. He assembled it from common items, including a digital camera, a cell phone with GPS, a weather balloon, fishing line, and duct tape. The entire project cost about $200. Madigan says you could use a lunchbox, you could use Tupperware, or even cardboard. Madigan, who's 28, said he got the idea when he saw students at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology building a similar camera. After getting approval from the federal government, he launched his space camera in the Imperial Valley. The balloon took the camera more than 24 miles above Southern California. It automatically snapped dozens of photographs, some over the coast of San Diego and Coronado.
How is this a space camera? Where's the space part of this story?
Well,
it's just in the sky. That's not the same thing as the space. Unless you're really going with the broadest possible definition of space, like place.
Well, it went very high.
It went really high.
Where does space start? How many miles?
I believe that space starts once you leave the stratosphere.
Well, oh, okay.
I mean, I could be wrong about that. I mean, I guess theoretically, like, inside your nostrils is a space, but it's not. That's a space. That is not space. It is as it is commonly and, I believe, colloquially known. I don't mean to rain on the guy's, you know, like, fishing line parade or whatever, but it just seems like that's a guy who wanted to put the prefix of space onto a word because it makes it seem futuristic.
Okay, you might be right.
Where's the robot story?
We hate
him
now.
Hand me the robot story.
Sure.
Okay.
We're going to find out more about this roboticist Choi Hung Aaron of Georgia. By the way that it's written here, it makes it seem like it says roboticist Choi Hung Aaron, King of Georgia. So it makes like he is, in fact, the imperial overlord of Georgia and is busy creating, like, a robot that'll give you, like, a schwitz.
Know that he's not?
I don't.
Do we know that's not true?
I don't even... No, it's... I mean, today's news seems to have a bit of an elastic approach toward actual truth. So, you know, who knows? Really, who am I to say? Okay.
The CDC is releasing new results on how lung cancer incident varies by race and geographic region. Dr. Michael Underwood is the CDC's epidemic service officer.
Among whites, the highest lung cancer incident rate was in the South. The highest incidence rates among blacks, American Indians, Alaskan Natives, and Hispanics were actually in the Midwest. And the highest incidence among Asians and Pacific Islanders was seen in the West.
As we've said before in the past, this is another one of those cuts. It just sounds like where you're calling up in the morning to see what the school lunch menu is going to be. And this is a guy telling you that it's going to be, it's going to be toast with jam.
Well, Dr. Underwood explains the variations in race and region.
These variations may be due to regional differences in smoking prevalence, exposure to carcinogens, and other factors.
A little bit of a lisp going on in this guy's delivery here. I find it distracting. Point that I couldn't even really tell what he was saying there. I was distracted by the fact that here's the thing. This guy has exactly the same lisp that Ice-T has that everybody sort of is afraid to point out, you know? Like, that's why because he's Ice-T.
Yeah.
I mean, it's he's never had to go to, like, a linguist or anything, because who's going to step up and tell Ice-T, yo, Ice, you have a lisp going on? Because it's like the next thing you know, you're just like, you light one eye.
These variations may be due to regional differences in smoking prevalence, exposure to carcinogens.
You know who this guy is? This is the guy who, when you're driving over, like, one of the passes here in Washington or something, Squalamie Pass or I got some... This is like, I got this email the other day, like...
I got the same one.
Taking me to task by the whole Snoqualmie thing. So it's apparently Snoqualmie.
Yes.
Which is weird.
Because there's no... See, yeah, in that one, it's Snoqualmie. There's no so you don't pronounce it. But at the same time,
that's no guideline to how anything is pronounced.
There's no A in Puyallup.
Yeah, but saying that I don't put an A there because it's not written doesn't mean anything. There's all kinds of words that have vowels that you put in and vowels that you take out, whether or not they're actually, like, supposed to be there.
And I'm saying that I believe that's wrong. I believe that that should not be. I am putting my foot down.
You believe what is wrong?
I believe that making up vowel sounds when there is no vowel in the word, or dropping vowel sounds when there is a vowel, this is wrong.
Are you going to be pronouncing the rest of your words in this newscast according to this law?
No, I'm going to do it the way that
you're going to hew to what the man says you ought to do.
I'm going to go along with societal preferences, but I personally I don't agree.
I don't even know where I was going here. Oh yeah, but this guy.
These variations may be due to
He sounds like the guy that when you're going up one of the passes and it's snowed in, that there's that thing by the side of the road telling you to keep your radio turned to AM 1530 for updates on ice conditions and whether or not you got to chain up your ride.
These variations may be due to regional differences in smoking prevalence.
Oh, you know, it's like if you think Mount St. Helens is going to be belching ash into the atmosphere or something. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget this program is available later on today via iTunes. Also coming up at 1 o'clock today. Shortly thereafter, we'll have the Rick Emerson Show with your Job Watch, your Monkey Watch, Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week, and Roger Klein of Roger Klein and the Peacemakers. At the news desk here is Don Taylor.
Federal drug regulators unveiled 36 proposed warning labels for cigarette packages on Wednesday, including some that are striking pictures of smoking's effects. I actually forwarded those to our visual aid page.
Was it rickemerson.com/pictures?
Yes. So hopefully it's actually there.
All right, let me...
Designed to cover half of a pack's surface area, the new labels are intended to spur smokers to quit by providing graphic reminders of tobacco's dangers. The labels are required under a law passed last year that gave the Food and Drug Administration the power to regulate tobacco products for the first time. The proposed labels include pictures of a man smoking from a tracheotomy tube inserted into his throat, a diseased lung, and a woman holding a baby in a smoke-filled room. The proposal stayed away from some of the more gruesome labels used in other countries where pictures of blackened teeth and diseased mouths are common.
Well, that's what they got in Britain. You go to Britain, you buy cigarettes in London or something, and it's like 4/5 of the pack is just a picture of, like, some sort of just sort of some spongy, unpleasant-looking mass, and then it says below that, like, your lung, you know, or something. And it's just, and they're, which, of course, then everybody in Britain just walks around wheezing like they're about to fall over half the time, so it's not like any, like it's really having any any demonstrable effect there.
The United States was the first country to require that tobacco products bear health warnings, and all cigarette packages now sold in the U.S. have modest and widely ignored messages, like Surgeon General's warning, smoking causes lung cancer, heart disease, emphysema, and may complicate pregnancy. A growing number of countries have gone well beyond such brief warnings and now require large graphic depictions of smoking's effects. With today's announcement, the United States edges a step closer to joining those nations' efforts to reduce the resulting centuries-long epidemic of tobacco-related deaths.
This is one of those things that they just don't bother to ask me about, and it's to their detriment because I'd be able to tell them how to do this. By the way, that is up. If you go to rickemerson.com/pictures, you go to visual aids for November 10th, 2010. That is rickemerson.com/pictures. You go to visual aids November 10th, 2010, and you'll be able to see the photo here. So I'm actually I'm bringing that up right now so I can look at it.
So is it a collect them all sort of a thing? Because, I mean, I stopped smoking, but I can imagine myself going in there and just telling them. It's like, can I have the guy with the tracheotomy?
No, these are just these are ridiculous. Are these the actual? Now, are these mock-ups? I mean, I know those it's not the actual brand, but are these the photos they're going to be using?
Those are mock-ups of the photos.
Well, this one you can't even tell what it is. The first one where the guy's holding the oxygen mask or whatever it looks, or it's like a POV thing where it's like you are putting the on. It looks like a guy holding one of those. It looks like a guy holding a like a breast implant where it's just like a bag of saline. The other one is just hilarious because it looks like it's the guy smoking out of his tracheotomy tube, but it looks like he's just sprung a leak. It looks like he's some sort of a steam-filled robot, and it's just like he's just part of him has gotten punctured. And then there's the toe tag thing, which is just awesome looking. So yeah, these are just sort of like a carcinogen Pokemon, as I think you just noted. What they ought to do if they really want to get because it's all young people, right? Because if you're 25 and smoking.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're 25, 30, 35, like, there's no help for you, friend. I mean, really, if you just wake up and go, I'm going to keep smoking today, like, you know, whatever. I mean, that's on you. But if the theory is that they're going to try to dissuade young people from smoking, they ought to just put up billboards everywhere just saying that, you know, every time you smoke, an old white guy makes money. That's it. Because you really, that's the thing. Like, if you want to keep money away from old white men, and who doesn't, really, the best thing you can do is to quit smoking because you're paying old white guys like three times if you do that. Yeah. First of all, you're paying tobacco farmers. Then you're paying the government. Then you're paying the healthcare industry. All three things run by old white guys, largely in the South, by the way. So, you know, whenever you smoke, you just give your money to an old, wrinkly-ass white man in the South. So, if you want to keep doing that, have at it. But you probably don't. But, of course, they will never use that ad campaign because they don't bother to ask me, Rick Emerson, exactly how they should proceed with these things.
Well, that was all of our science for
all
the
right, there you go.
Time being.
There's your science on the march for, what is today? Today is Wednesday? There you go.
Yes, indeed.
Marching through this Wednesday and into the future. You were listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up later on today, a little bit after 1 o'clock. Legion of News brought to you by Castalia Language Center, based in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon, where you can find Spanish language classes that are tailored to a couple of things. To your schedule, to the time of the day that's going to work best for you, and to the day of the week that's going to work best for you, because everybody got a different schedule. You got your job, you got your family, you got all kinds of things, and you're not necessarily able to carve out hours and hours every day to learn a language the way that you did when you were in high school. The other thing you can't do the way you did it when you were in high school is to learn by just memorizing things off a chart or just cramming stuff into your head, which you regurgitate later, because you don't really learn anything but how to memorize. You don't learn anything conversationally or colloquially. And if you want to be able to speak the language fluently with a modicum of casualness, you want to learn it as though you were speaking in an everyday conversation, which is the way they specialize in teaching Spanish to adults at Castalia Language Center. You can find out more about it by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. And you're going to be in a class of no more than seven other people, which means they keep the class sizes very small, and they are limited to eight people at most. So you get near individual attention at Castalia.
Ocho.
PortlandSpanish.com is the website for that. That is PortlandSpanish.com. Tell Clara Gremmel or the other instructors at PortlandSpanish.com at Castalia Language Center that you heard about it right here at Legion of News. Castalia Language Center can be reached at PortlandSpanish.com. Here is Don Taylor.
A man is in custody after a lawnmower he was riding struck a train in Kansas City. The crash occurred about 4:15 p.m. yesterday on train tracks near the River Market that parallel the Missouri River. The empty coal train was traveling about 1 mile per hour. The man was bumped, but not injured, police said.
What was going 1 mile per hour?
An empty coal train.
We're sure the train was actually moving.
That's,
I mean, really, at 1 mile an hour, how would you even, how would they even know that?
I know, it's like, it's just barely coasting.
They're sure it was a train, right? It wasn't just a house that was real skinny?
No, it's a train.
Okay.
Police are working to determine whether the man was impaired at the time of the crash. The lawnmower was crumpled into a heap after the crash. So I think he was actually going faster. But
how,
I mean,
fast can a lawnmower possibly go?
I don't know.
It was crumpled into a heap because he hit a train that was going 1 mile an hour.
And then maybe he leapt off of it and left it on the tracks in front of the train, and the train just slowly rolled over it.
I don't think that happens, first of all. I don't think a train slowly rolls over a thing that's this, especially if it's going 1 mile. I think there are facts missing from the story. I think this is like a, this is some sort of Ravel model kit that is missing, like, the glue. You know, or maybe just the maybe the sticker portion that would add some detail and clarity to this. Okay. But you know what? I'll just smile and nod, as I always do.
George Bush was never John McCain's biggest fan, but an anecdote from Financial Times reporter Alex Barker reveals that enmity might have extended further than many suspected. In 2008, the midst of the presidential campaign, Bush had just publicly endorsed the Arizona senator. Gordon Brown and a group of British reporters were gathered in the Oval Office, and somebody brought up McCain's campaign. "I probably won't even vote for the guy," Bush remarked. "I had to endorse him, but I'd have endorsed Obama if they'd asked me."
Awesome.
Shockingly, nobody did. The complex relationship between the two men also earns a mention in Bush's memoir, Decision Points, when the former president criticizes McCain's handling of the financial crisis lost political opportunity.
How great would it have been if Bush had endorsed Obama? Oh, man, I wish I could go back in time and make that so, just so I could see everybody's heads explode. That's fantastic. I would give anything to have some sort of, like, what-if machine where I could go back and have him endorse Obama and then just sit back and just watch the entire country just slowly go bonkers over the course of one long afternoon. That would be...
What would they all say?
That would be the best thing in the history of things. Awesome.
More than 4,000 passengers and crew are still stranded off the Mexican coast after their cruise ship lost power. Supplies have been flown in while the ship was being towed back to port. Laura Rizigo, who has family aboard the ship, expresses her frustration with the effort.
"I can't believe that they're going to let them stay on the ship this long, this many hours, this many days, with you know, not the best of accommodations."
They're on a cruise ship.
Seriously.
What do you mean, not the best of accommodations? It's a cruise ship. It's better than being in my house.
Wow.
The Coast Guard's Captain Tom Ferris explains the plan to get the ship into port. Power remains out on the ship. Okay, maybe it's not that nice then on the cruise ship. Toilet service and cold water have been restored, however.
So you got a toilet, you got water, you're also on a... And presumably you're not cruising through the Antarctic.
Right.
Right? Where are they? They're off the coast of what?
Mexico.
Oh, shut your head.
You know,
I mean,
they probably have to, like, the all in the kitchen, everybody's going crazy, going, "Oh, we better like make sure that all this food gets eaten for all these buffets that we had planned before it goes rotten." So it's like,
I guess we'll just have to have another day of laying on the deck in the Mexico sun.
Oh, damn it. They're offering us free drinks for our inconvenience.
I mean, they're basically camping, but they're camping on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
Like off the coast of Mexico.
Yeah.
"I can't believe that they're going to let them stay on the ship this long, this many hours, this many days, with you know, not the best of accommodations."
You just know her name is Cindy.
I mean, okay, great. You had to poop in a bucket for a day or two.
Oh, who hasn't had
to do that?
Come
on, you're on a cruise ship in Mexico.
And plus, if you really need to, you know, poop in something else, the ocean is right there. You know? I mean, come on.
I mean, I spent a week in Mexico camping on the beach. You know, that had to be a lot worse than being on a cruise ship. No sympathy for these people. Google is now wooing employees with a 10% raise, according to the Wall Street Journal. The salary hike will go to all 23,000 Google employees in January in an effort to keep top talent from slinking off to Facebook and other Silicon Valley companies.
I don't think slinking means what they think it means in this story.
"We want to make sure that you feel rewarded for your hard work," wrote Google CEO Eric Schmidt in an email to employees. "We want to continue to attract the best people to Google." The company has even devised an algorithm to predict which employees are most likely to desert the company based on employee reviews so that it can prevent attrition.
Here's the thing about that sentence right there. That's either true because Google has just officially become a parody of itself, or it's not true, but they know that they can just say stuff like that now and we'll believe it. Not unlike how Stephen Hawking can say that time travel is possible. And we go, well, he's in a wheelchair and he talks like a robot. He must know what he's talking about.
Investment analysts say the wealth transfer to employees could cut into profit margins, underlying just how important holding on to top talent has become to competitive internet ventures. Google clearly doesn't have the same equity appeal that Facebook is offering, said a partners analyst. Over the past years, several Google engineers that worked on Chrome and Android defected to Facebook. I like that industry financial analysts actually find it sort of puzzling and really significant that a company would actually want to take some of its money and reward its employees rather than just bump up their own profit margins.
Well, I mean,
oh my God.
The thing about Google is, like, it's not like Google is a one-product company or something, but, I mean, Google is very much, I mean, that's a company that exists only because of the strength of their algorithmic processes, as I understand it. I mean, it's like, yeah. You know, that's like how they revolutionized the whole search thing or whatever, as opposed to Facebook, which has, you know, there's so many layers to what makes Facebook popular and to what has made it so is such an entrenched part of the online experience. And I don't think all of that has to do with, like, the technical underpinnings of the service. That has a lot to do with, I think, positioning and marketing and, you know, and imagery and so forth. But with Google, that's all about, like, you got to have a team of brainiacs in the basement, mm-hmm. you know, or otherwise the whole thing just goes to hell.
Brainiacs in the Basement is a great name for an album.
It really is. Somebody ought to file that away.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Wednesday, right here at Legion of News.
Rocker Bret Michaels claims he did not have an affair with Miley Cyrus's mother, Tish, who split with Billy Ray Cyrus last month. "The answer is no," said Michaels during an interview on Fox and Friends. "I've been friends with her family forever. It started out with me and Miley simply working on a song together. Her mom, Tish, likes Every Rose Has Its Thorn. The first concert Miley ever saw was Poison, and so they wanted to remake it for the new record."
By the way, I think I speak the truth when I say mom's everywhere, like every rose has its thorn. It doesn't matter. You know, anybody who has ever had any woman over the age of 35 probably could be wooed by Bret Michaels on the lawn. And if you say no, Don Taylor, and I can tell by the furrying of your contrarian brow that you're about to, you're lying.
No.
No one believes you.
No.
Doesn't matter.
Bret Michaels, no.
I don't care.
Nothing for me.
I don't believe you.
Plus, even no matter
I reject this.
No matter how charming and persuasive he might be, I would just think about Rock of Love and think how many places that penis has been, and I'd just be a little icked out.
Nope. Sorry. No, we reject that. We're going to choose to believe otherwise. And by the way, what is the thing with Billy Ray Cyrus just now splitting up with Tish? Why have we been talking about him like he's a single dad all this time? I mean, that's been the whole thing.
No,
I mean,
he's a single dad on Hannah Montana.
I know, but I mean, on the show he is.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, it seems like I've seen a lot of news reports where they have referred to him as a single dad in real life, and that's why he was that's what made him such a great dad, is that he had, you know, he'd had his own success or whatever, but then he turned around and he'd raised this daughter who became very successful on her own as a single dad and whatever. And I know there's always some conflation of the character and the whatever, but I'm just saying, I think that, like, I certainly believe that he was a single dad, so I'm wondering if that is a thing that the media itself occasionally got confused on, because I've never seen an episode of Hannah Montana in my life. So that's just a weird thing. I had no idea that he was married. In no way.
Although they called off their engagement in August, actors Rachel Bilson, who was on The O.C., and Hayden Christensen are dating again, reports People. The couple starred in the action film Jumper and got engaged in December 2008. 88-year-old actress Betty White was made an honorary ranger yesterday by the U.S. Forest Service. "Wilderness is harder and harder to find these days on this beautiful planet, and we're abusing our planet to the point of almost no return," said White.
"I'm a lady who loves some hard wood."
Who was presented with a badge and a ranger's Stetson hat at the Kennedy Center. "In my heart, I've been a forest ranger all my life, but now I'm official," she said.
No one has been a forest ranger all their life in their heart, not even Betty White, but I give her props for saying it. I mean, points for crafting that phrase.
Director Darren Aronofsky and actress Rachel Weisz are no longer engaged. Reps for both parties released the following joint statement. Rachel Weisz and Darren Aronofsky have been separated for some months. They remain close friends and are committed to raising their son together in New York City. The couple who worked together on the film The Fountain got engaged in 2005.
Darren Aronofsky is just busy having sex with Bret Michaels.
And I tell you, I hope my husband doesn't hear about this, because somewhere in his mind, I think he might actually think he has a shot with Rachel Weisz.
And so is she, she's in The Fountain. What else has she been in?
I can never remember what she's been in. She's one of those actresses, you look at her and you go,
Oh, that chick.
And I've seen her in like so many things, but I never, ever remember what else she
was in that movie with the guy who did the thing.
I do know that she's one of those actresses that every time her name is mentioned, my husband just kind of, like, his eyes glaze over and he goes, Rachel Weisz.
Like a McRib is back kind of a thing. Oh, yeah, okay, I know exactly who that is. All right, fair enough.
Yeah. No charges will be filed against Charlie Sheen after an incident in which New York police described finding him emotionally disturbed in a hotel room. And despite all the negative press Sheen got over the incident, his attorney, Yael Galanter, tells Joy Behar that Sheen won't be filing a lawsuit either.
I don't think that somebody who's got the celebrity status that Charlie has could ever sue a tabloid.
Galanter says a celebrity like Sheen can't sue tabloids for all the negative press he got regarding the incident.
To prove actual forethought of malice and intent. And the way the tabloids do it, you can't, because they always cite confidential sources. It's an impossible scenario.
This is exactly the kind of guy I want to be my lawyer. Guys like this who just sound like they know what they're talking about and like they got the whole system wired and they know, I've known Justice Flanagan for a long time. I know what kind of whiskey he drinks. It's all going to be fine. This is all going to go away, Charlie. You just get yourself a whore and, you know, just while away the weekend. It'll be fine.
Plus, if he's going to start suing tabloids for running negative stories about him, it's like, when would he stop?
It would be his new job. He would need another half a man just to do that. By the way, Rachel Weisz, she was in About a Boy. That's where I know her from.
Oh, that's right.
She was, she was in both Mummy films as well. So she's her. By the way, you are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor. Coming up later on today, the Rick Emerson Show at a little bit after 1 o'clock. Today, we'll talk to Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week, who I swear to God, he's got to think about suicide bombers. And I don't really know what that means, but it's just, it was in the email he sent me. He's like, I'm talking about Ken Kesey and suicide bombers. And I just sent back like a, okay, thanks, you know, like, okay. Also, Mr. Roger Klein of Roger Klein and the Peacemakers is going to join us via the phone later on today. Job Watch, Monkey Watch, and so forth. Legion of News brought to you today and every day by fine business partners such as CJsHighClimbing.com. That is CJsHighClimbing.com. You can get a hold of them right now, this very moment, this instant. Even as I say their phone number, you can actually be picking up the phone and you could be calling them right now to say, by God, what a fine company you are. Thank you for bringing us this entertainment every day, CJ's High Climbing. And they'd say, no, thank you. And you'd say, no, thank you. And then it would be a whole, like the whole the gopher thing from the Warner Brothers cartoons, and then you'd never get anything done. So maybe don't go that particular route with it, but call them at 503-228-9278. That's 503-228-9278, or you can find out more about their service at CJsHighClimbing.com. Whether you've got downspout clogs or minor gutter repairs or adjustments or things that you need done, whether it has to do with cleaning off the roof or getting rid of the mold or the algae or actually just getting rid of lawn and other nature-based detritus that is piled up in front of your house, or whether it's it's doing that thing we talked about, the thing with the deal with the dolphin on the top, and it says, don't dump oil, I'm downstream. And it's like you can't ever dump anything, because by the time you get to like the end of October, the thing is just so clogged with leaves. And leaves are one of those things.
Is that a dolphin or a fish? It was a fish.
I don't know. It's a thing. It's a thing that can't. It's a thing that can't swim in oil. You know, whatever. It's a thing that is apparently made so poorly and is just so weak that just a little bit of crude oil in the lungs just is enough to kill it off.
Unlike Aquaman, he could probably swim through oil.
Hey, you know, they really missed the boat here, so to speak, by not making some sort of specialty Aquaman comic when the whole BP thing happened down in the Gulf.
Yes.
They should have done the whole, and it would be, here's the thing, somebody, and by somebody I mean like Aaron Duran, and you could get away with this because it's satire, so you wouldn't have to pay any royalties on this, you wouldn't have to get the permission if it's a parodying work. Luther Campbell versus the Roy Acuff estate. What was my point? There ought to be some specialty Aquaman comic where it's like Aquaman and all the creatures of the deep versus BP, and it just ends with that Tad Allen guy from BPE being eaten by a sperm whale. You know? Or just like a kraken comes out from the deep and, you know, and then it just takes him away. end.
I would read that.
There you go. See? You tell me, Rick Emerson, yeah. What the people like. Right there, there's your free idea. And it's free because this program is brought to you by CJsHighClimbing.com. Reason enough to call them. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying leaves, they turn on you because they're, you know, they're on the tree. Hey, let's go look at the leaves change, which is a thing that, which, by the way, can I just say, just like a little confidential to everybody from New York who feels the need to tell us about, like, well, you know, you haven't seen the leaves change like they leave, you know, like they look in Central Park. Leaves changing, it looks the same no matter where you live. You don't have special leaves in New York. Leaves changing in Manhattan look exactly like the leaves here. So just, you know, shut it. But I'm just saying they turn on you because the leaves
bastards.
Are great. They're beautiful. They're wonderful. But then like a week later, you're like, God damn leaves. And they're just everywhere. I mean, you go from, it's like one bite too many of Taco Bell.
Where they're suddenly like Charlie Sheen.
That's exactly where he's great, you know, until your daughter comes home covered in blood and filled with broken glass. How great is Charlie Sheen then? Huh? Come on. You know what I'm talking about. That's right. I don't know where I was going here. Well, in any event, CJ's High Climbing has really very little to do with everything I was just saying. But if you've got, messy, dangerous, or unpleasant maintenance tasks around the house, specifically those that have to do with, cleaning your gutters, your roof, the outside of your home, anything like that, they can take care of it for you. They can usually give you an estimate via Google Earth, means they can just do it over the phone by looking at your house and going, that's going to be about whatever. And then they can invoice you after the fact, means you don't have to take time off to actually be there when they're doing the work.
It will probably be far more affordable than you think it is. That's the thing about stuff like this. You think it's going to cost like a fortune, and then you call them, and you say, how much is it? And they tell you, and you go, oh, is that all?
That is a pleasingly low amount. Thank you, CJ's High Climbing.
Yeah.
You can find out more about them by going to CJsHighClimbing.com, or you can raise them on the phone if you like. It's 503-228-9278. Let's do one more here, and then we will bring the curtain down on this.
Let's do another little entertainment thing here. Taylor Swift was named Country Songwriter of the Year at the BMI Awards on Tuesday night, becoming the youngest person to win the award at age 20. The pop sensation also won Country Song of the Year with co-writer Liz Rose for You Belong With Me. She's the first songwriter to win that award 3 years in a row.
By the way, the interesting thing about that is not even that she's like 20 and did that, because, I mean, it's, you know, every now and again, every decade or so, you just get some freakishly talented person who just sits there and just, I don't know, just like some Brian Wilson type that just like makes hit songs like she was just paring off pieces of a fingernail. But it's the fact that she actually, if you look at that record anywhere online, it is no longer even classed. She's no longer even classed as being a country artist. That's the interesting thing about this new record of hers, is it is like her actual, there is no country of any kind. I mean, even in like the vaguest pop kind of sense, she has officially severed, I think, her ties with the sort of, with the country world. She realizes there's a much bigger pot of gold to be had elsewhere.
Well, Johnny Cash won in 1956 at 24, and the youngest previously was Bill Anderson, who had won in 1960 when he was 23. But Swift became the youngest winner earlier this year of their Pop Song of the Year award. So there you go.
There you go. All right, we will end the things now, and we will revisit them tomorrow at noon with another exciting episode of Legion of News, which you can find right here every weekday, Monday through Friday, from noon until 1 p.m. at Cascadia.fm. You can also get it via download later on the day at this website or legionofnews.com, also via iTunes. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemerson.com. Legion of News comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, from where all good things derive. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic day. We will talk to you tomorrow again at noon for another episode of Legion of News.